Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hercules Invictus and Athena Victory celebrates the mythic impulses of ancient Greece and Rome, and they invite you to celebrate with them. Welcome to Voice of Olympus.
Greetings. Welcome to Voice of Olympus. This is Hercules. Tonight, Athena is not available, so I'll be flying solo. But we have an awesome guest, Jean-Louis de Biasi, who is a very accomplished occultist, and he is one of the torchbearers for the ancient Hermetic tradition. So without further ado, Jean-Louis, greetings and welcome to Voice of Olympus.
And thank you for having me tonight. I am more than happy to answer to your questions.
Thank you very much. Now, what first awoke in you and caused you to follow a metaphysical path?
The most honest answer would be I don't know.
Okay.
I really don't know. Fair enough. Maybe. And when I think about that, I guess the stories from my grandmother, from my grandparents, and so on, because I was living in the deep country in France, and all the stories were full of ghosts and gods and goddesses and so on. So maybe it was the first step here for my interest in all that.
And how did you first discover that there was an actual tradition or several traditions still existing?
I was lucky because mother of a friend, a very good friend, and he was very young, was a member of the initiatic order called Amok. This is a Rose Cross order in the United States. And this order was present in France at this time, and I knew that she was part of this order. So I have been very curious, asking questions, and so on. And it began my interest to these initiatic orders, and I began very early to look for everything related to ancient traditions. And I found the Rosicrucian tradition, Martinism, Hermeticism, and so on. And this is why I went very deep in this direction. And when I was adult, I began to learn Greek and Roman philosophy and became philosophy teacher after in France.
How long did you do that?
I have been a philosopher. Equal teacher during 18 years in France.
Wow.
Teaching children between 18 and 22, so almost adults. And my specialty was the ancient traditions, ancient philosophy, Greek, Roman, and in the same time, Nietzsche. That means German philosophy, because my master in philosophy has been on the morals and religion in the work of Nietzsche. And as you may know, Nietzsche was not well known to love religions, at the opposite.
No. But he spoke of the gods, however.
Yes, exactly. In fact, he was rejecting very strongly the monotheism and Christianity and Judaism, but was very involved in this kind of approach of ancient religions and, more importantly, Greek religion. And so it was very interesting to learn and to teach this opposition against monotheism and, in the same time, this respect to ancient cultures and religions. It has been for me very important, essential in my life, this opposition and this possibility to accept and to understand an ancient religion, philosophical and theology, and in the same time very different than Christianity and Judaism, that means biblical traditions.
Yes, it's a very different mindset, a very different way of looking at the world and interacting with the world. A lot of modern people believe that the ancient religions were foolish, but that's not the case at all. They're very deep and very transformative if you open your ears and open your eyes and try to listen to what they're telling you.
Of course, and if you... This is very easy to understand, to see, because if you want to learn something about the ancient world, ancient civilizations, Mediterranean civilizations, you have just to go in a bookstore and look the philosophical part, section of the bookstore, and you will see the huge, very huge work for every philosopher, from every philosopher. If you go at the opposite, and in the religion part, in the religion section, you will find the Bible and the Gospel and comments of the Bible and Gospels. That's it.
Pretty much.
And this opposition is always troubling, really.
Yes, it definitely is. I see I'm, even on a lot of interfaith boards, when people who are polytheists post something, there are always comments, oh, there's still people doing that. We've outgrown, humanity's outgrown these religions and philosophies. And it's just a very interesting, this idea that, you know, that there has to be one particular way of looking at the world.
Yes, and in fact, the most important, I guess, the essential part of philosophy is to understand that you can analyze, think by yourself, develop a critical mind on any subject in the universe, gods, the cosmos, the earth, nature, everything. And if you choose the monotheistic path, you have to forget your critical mind because you have a book giving you the only answer possible. So this is a very interesting, important difference. On one way, you have to develop a critical mind and to understand by yourself, trying to find something. On the other side, you listen and you believe. You have no other choice. This is not bad. This is just different.
It is different, yes. How did you become a Mason? Because you have a long and... illustrious history as a Mason. How did that come about?
Yeah, I have been initiated in 1990. In fact, as I said, I have been very early interested by all the initiatic traditions of the Western world. Of course, I went also to Tibetan and Hinduist traditions, but I have been initiated in the Western tradition, and it has been my focus all the time. And when you analyze all the initiatic orders in the Western world, Freemasonry has been from the beginning, from the 17th century almost, and until today, a very important tradition, very famous. with controversies, with deep history. So, of course, when you know that and when you discover that, and I did that, my goal has been initiated in this tradition to know more from the inside and to know more about all the aspects of Freemasonry. And this is what I did. And I did that in France because I became a grand officer in France. You know that there are several degrees in Freemasonry. And
yes,
the grand officers are the highest degrees. So I did that. And when I moved in North America, you have to know that Freemasonry is different in North America and Europe most of the time. So I have been reinitiated in the United States.
Wow.
And I did it the same way, from the beginning to the top, and that's it. So it was an interesting experience because I had the experience from European in France and Italy and so on, and the experience as someone living in the United States and being initiated in Canada, then in the U.S., and I gave a few lectures in Brazil, in Africa, so I can, I think, understand very well how this Masonic world works, because this is very...
You've also written several books on Masonry, Secrets and Practices of the Freemasons,
yes,
and Esoteric Freemasonry. So you've written quite a lot about the subject. So you're an expert.
Yeah, in fact, in French, I wrote 4 books about Freemasonry, and they became a reference because I talked about what is called Egyptian Freemasonry, which is a part of the esoteric Freemasonry in Europe. In the U.S., I wrote the first one, Secrets and Practices of the Freemasons, and I am writing the next one, and you talked about it, Esoteric Freemasonry. And what I am trying to do is something different, because in this Masonic literature, most of the time, you have 2 kinds of books, and I am not criticizing anyone. I am just describing this kind of literature about Freemasonry. First,
okay,
book about history. They are interesting, and we have to read it, but book about history. Other books are about an attempt to describe what is the tradition of Freemasonry. And some are talking a little bit about the rituals. What I am trying to do is to explain now what are the differences between European and Freemasonry and Freemasonry in America, and trying to give to anyone, Mason or not, the opportunity to use simple rituals alone at home. Because I discovered a few practices, several practices in the past, in the Masonic tradition, that are not used today. And some of them can be practiced individually. But nobody published that, and nobody explained that before. So I am publishing and explaining these rituals. This is not a self-initiation per se, but something very close to that. If I give you a ritual, Masonic ritual, and I give you an interpretation of this ritual in order for you to practice the ritual individually at home, you will feel from the inside what is really the tradition. So instead of talking and talking about history, which is interesting, I am trying to give the opportunity to anyone using the book to do the experience, to make the experience of Freemasonry through practices and rituals, along explanations, as I just said.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have been invited to be a Mason here in the United States, and I attended a few open type of get-togethers, I guess I would call them. And unfortunately, my time right now, it was difficult to budget to follow that particular path, but I'm intending on following it at some point in the future. However, I know that with the Masons that I spoke to, very few seemed aware of the esoteric history and the esoteric tradition. For many of them, at least what they were saying, it was kind of like belonging to the Elks or the Rotary Club or any one of these other type of organizations for them. Is this typical of Masonry that only some people are into the esoteric aspects and the rest are into the philanthropic aspects or not?
In fact, yes, this is typical in North America. This is typical in North America, Australia. Most of the time, the Freemasonry is used as a way to practice philanthropy and to help in this way. So yes, you have 3 degrees plus 33 after what they are called high degrees or side degrees. So you have initiations and ceremonies along the year, but the ultimate goal is to become a good man and to help in the society. This is a main goal in American Freemasonry today. It was different at the beginning of Freemasonry here in the U.S. when George Washington and Benjamin Franklin were Freemason. They practiced a different kind of Freemasonry, more focused on strange rituals and rituals very close to esoteric Freemasonry. But today, the orientation of American Freemasonry, yes, is very much philanthropy, which is a good thing. So you have some people interested by esoteric Freemasonry, but much less than at the beginning. In Europe, this is different, maybe the opposite. They are interested by philosophy, so Masonic philosophy, Masonic history, and Masonic esotericism. This is quite different here.
I know that I was interested primarily in the esoteric aspect, and because those were not readily available, I kind of, with budgeting my time, I put it aside because I wouldn't be getting what I personally was looking for by following that path right now. So I could understand. I would probably have a greater interest in the European form of Freemasonry.
Yeah, but in the same time, everyone in North America can find through Freemasonry here esotericism, symbolism, and so on, because symbols are still used in the rituals, but they are not taught directly. So you have to be initiated and you have to learn by yourself. Or, if you are lucky, you can find someone who, such as you, is interested by more than philanthropy. I found in Canada and the US people like that, but, as I said, they are few.
Now, what is your take on Pike? I enjoyed reading Pike as a teenager. His books were very much full of symbolism and so forth, but I get a mixed reaction when I bring up Pike with Masons. For some people, it's a positive name, and other people, it's a negative name. Why is this?
Every important man is at the origin of a polemic, yes. If we can say something about Pike regarding the links with Freemasonry and what he wrote about Freemasonry, what I can say is that this is an interesting literature. In some groups, it became even someone like a prophet. The writings from Pike are very close to the Bible. So maybe this is too dogmatic for me. But if you read the text and if you keep your critical mind, you have very interesting things, very interesting text about symbolism. But not all is true and correct. Of course, there are a few parts that are totally wrong regarding history and symbolism. This is why you have to read carefully Pike, because this is someone important in the Masonic tradition and Western tradition in general. But be careful about what he's saying regarding symbolism, because sometimes it was the way that people at this time understood symbolism. But we know that archaeology and history made important progress, and we have to update this reading. We cannot stay with Pike saying, oh, okay, all is correct, all is fine. No. This is an interesting book. We have to know if we are interested by Masonic tradition. We cannot forget this book. But that's it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm used to, like, I read a lot of theosophy when I was much younger. And theosophy still holds great appeal to me. But everyone from Blavatsky on warned you that there are things left out of what you're being told, and some of the things you're reading are deliberately misleading. And the Tao Te King, Lao Tzu says, the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. So in other words, be very careful what you're reading. So I've always taken that warning to heart. And when I read esoteric literature, I know that, you know, basically use my critical mind, as you say, as I'm reading it, and not just accept everything at face value. But that's a good warning.
Yeah, it's important to keep in mind that we have a part of our humanity is the necessity to believe in something. Mm-hmm. So when you read, when we are reading a book very close to our feelings, very close to who we are, we have the temptation to accept everything without this critical mind. So maybe the critical mind is even more important when you read something you love, because in this case, you are not cautious enough. You have to be very careful in this case.
That's a very good warning. I happen to like the ancient astronaut literature, even though I know that it's full of inconsistencies and false information. It's just fun to read and speculate about. I greatly enjoy it and love it.
But this is so fascinating. We have just to keep in mind that we are reading a story. Like,
right.
We are close to the fireplace and we are reading a story, and this is very nice and everything. Few parts are right, others are not. So this
are not,
is always interesting. And for me, this is a part of what is essential called curiosity. We have to cultivate this curiosity, and this literature helps, really.
There was one part that got me starting thinking more critically, and that was when you were describing Alexander the Great outside of Tyre meeting with flying shields. And I knew, because I went to a Greek parochial school and I'm Greek, and I was saturated with the history and so forth for 8 years of my life. And then I continued reading on my own. So I knew that if that was a story, I would have heard it before I ran across it in an ancient astronaut book. And a lot of the ancient astronaut literature is not critical. So if they find something printed somewhere, they won't check it necessarily, but they'll repeat the story. So I knew that things like the Antikythera mechanism were real, because we had that archaeologist found that. But it is very, very, very important, as you said, if something appeals to you and you want it to be true, to question whether it is indeed true. Now, something can be untrue and useful, like the days of the week. I work with the days of the week, the wandering stars, in my daily spiritual practice. And yep. those days were set in order when people had a different understanding of our solar system. And they had the luminaries and then the classical planets. And we mm-hmm. know now that that's a totally inaccurate way of, you know, of looking at the wandering stars, because they're not under the vault of heaven. They're actually beyond our atmosphere. But psychologically, even though it's false scientifically, psychologically it works really well.
Exactly.
And it's like
yeah.
the progression of the zodiac. It's no longer how we follow it. So we're going by something that no longer exists anymore, but it's still useful. So we use it.
Yeah, and this is something very important to keep in mind, this distinction between a reality and myth and mythology. And when I say that, reality on one side, something you can see, experiment, and replicate. This is science. And the other part, mythology. But mythology is not the opposite of reality. This is something very much linked to what I call archetypes, for example.
Uh-huh.
Something that can have a strong reality in your mind, and that doesn't mean this is unreal. This is real for you in your mind. But of course, this is individual. You cannot say, I have the experience of contact with a god or a goddess. If someone is trying to ask you if this is true or not, you cannot demonstrate that. You just can experiment, feel it, but this is not something you can show to someone. You will show that you are happy with this relationship. That's it. So this is real inside you, but this is not real experimentally outside. So sometimes people are trying to oppose these two things, myth, mythology, archetypes, and reality. In fact, we have to oppose external reality and inner reality, which is very different, and which gives a lot of credit to spirituality, to theology, to philosophy, to everything. Philosophy maybe is just in the middle between a reality and external reality and inner reality. Philosophy is just in the middle. But theology, spirituality, and so on, this is the other part. So this is a distinction I wanted to make between these two aspects. And one can be combined to the other without any hesitation if we keep in mind that this is real for me, in my
right.
mind, but we cannot impose this reality to someone. And I have not to impose. Yeah.
I believe the same when I give talks, because I give talks and workshops all the time. I always mm-hmm. make sure that people understand that I am sharing my journey and what I see from where I've stood and how I understand it. And someone in the classroom or someone 5 minutes later or something can change my mind. It can cause me to see things differently, in which case yes. I will share my new understanding. So I tell everyone to keep that in mind, that this is just my perspective. It is, even though I'm well-informed and well-educated on these things, and I've been studying them for a long time, my opinion. And I'm sharing my best opinion to inform them and to have them entertain some thoughts to see if these thoughts will work for them. But you're absolutely correct. I think a lot mm-hmm. of people make a mistake when they do what some religions do, is try to impose this view on someone, and then it becomes handcuffs. It becomes a blindfold, and the person is stuck in that reality tunnel when there are so many other ways to look at the world.
Yes, and you have two levels. You are trying to impose your view, your beliefs to someone, and if it works or not, you are after trying to transform his or her life according
yes.
to your beliefs and your principles. And this is becoming politics in this case. So,
very, very true.
Really, two levels. First, you try to convince him or her and to adopt your beliefs. But second, it's very dangerous to try to change the society according to your beliefs. And in the past, it was not the case, because beliefs were beliefs, and philosophy were still there to say, okay, be careful. We are thinking about things. We are trying to find the best system for our society. We are not trying to impose our beliefs to transform society. And doesn't matter which belief it is, but we have to be careful about that. So spirituality, Hermeticism, everything is politics at any time.
Well, but both Pythagoras and Plato toyed with that too. You know, Plato tried to create the republic, the perfect society, and Pythagoras got into trouble initially when he started getting into a social reform beyond his mathematics. The temptation is there.
And this is why Nietzsche was very prudent regarding Pythagoras and Plato, because for him, the connection in their work between beliefs and transformation of society was too strong. It was important to really build a separation, a real border between both, between religion on the side and between society on the other side. And Freemasonry is pushed to do that also.
Yes, most definitely so. We're going to go to a brief break right now. We're going to listen to Bone Poets Orchestra song Oracle. Then we're going to play some PSAs. And then Jean-Louis and I will be back to pursue this very interesting topic.
Come away with you.
Thank you.
Hey now. No one is a stranger. She said, look into my eyes. Do you see your own reflection or the way you're gonna die? If you know the world half Monday, will the future set you free? You better get yourself real certain, cause there's things you can't unsee. Tell me, what's it gonna be? Do you really think you really wanna understand? Do you really wanna see some future in the palm of your hand?
International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
You're listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to the show.
Greetings, welcome back. This is Hercules, and this is Voice of Olympus on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Tonight's guest is Jean-Louis de Biasi, an author, a lecturer, and a metaphysician. Welcome back, Jean-Louis.
Hi, thank you.
Now, in addition to the books you wrote about the Freemasons, you've also written several awesome books on theurgy. So let's talk about those right now. I'm still reading your Rediscover the Magic of the Gods and Goddesses. It was a lot meatier than I initially thought, so I'm taking my time with it. And after I finish, I'm going to experiment with it. There'll be a review up by the end of this week. But how did you become involved with Hermeticism and theurgy?
As I said previously, I learned ancient philosophy, that means Greek and Roman philosophy, and when you learn philosophy, you very fast you discover that they are talking not just about philosophy. Few philosophers, such as Plato, for example, very well known, is talking about initiations, he's talking about Orphism. He's talking about several occult traditions. This is the same thing for Apuleius or other authors like this way. So when I discovered that, of course, I tried to know more, to understand more about it, and I discovered, as anyone, the Hermetic tradition. And I began to read the Corpus Hermeticum and other books related to this one, like Iamblichus, Mysteries of Egypt, and books like that. And this is very, very interesting because they are showing a way which is different than religion, which is different than philosophy, but combine both of these two aspects, religion and philosophy. So there were, most of the time, these theurgists were philosophers, scientists, and spiritual men or women. And it was really interesting and fascinating to see a tradition like that coming from ancient Egypt. And it was not just a fantasy, it was real, because we can really follow the masters of these traditions through their books, through their work. And this tradition is something that fascinates me even today, because we can see a continuation. This is maybe the only example besides Christianity or Judaism, I think, that in the pagan world, this is the unique tradition which we can follow like that from the ancient Egypt until today. And this is fascinating. This is why I learned it. I have been initiated in this tradition, and I continue to work with this tradition. Because this unique perspective and this unique place between philosophy and theology, or religion and spirituality. And many people really don't understand the difference. And I like to explain more about it, of course.
Okay, good. How would you describe the Ogdoadic tradition so that people who are new to it can understand it?
Oh, for me, this is a synonym to Hermetic tradition. This is almost the same thing. That means there is
why
a tradition
they call it,
going back.
Why would
to,
you call it? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Why do they call it the Ogdoadic tradition? That's the number 8 in Greek, Ogdo.
Yes, exactly. 8, because in the Hermetic tradition, the god of thought, the god who became after in the Greek tradition Hermes, or very close to him, not exactly the same, but thought or duty, has always been linked to the number 8. For many reasons, regarding the mythology, regarding the place where he lived, the place where the story began, everything was related to this number 8. So it's been called the Ogdoadic tradition. And this is very, very interesting to see in the Mediterranean world the presence of the symbol the number 8. I am not talking about the 8, the Latin number you use in calculation, but I am talking about every symbols related to the number 8, like the 8 star, like a double square, like architectural structures, so octagon, and so on. And you have a real tradition we can follow from ancient Egypt through Byzantium, Greece, after Europe, and the US, and the United States. And you have several examples in the United States of the presence of this symbol, very clear in Washington, D.C., very clear in other parts of the United States. So the number 8 is really the manifestation of the Hermetic tradition, where the Hermetic tradition manifests itself. And we have to follow the symbol, and we can learn a lot about it after.
I do that with Hercules also. There are certain symbols that are recurrent, and you can find them in different cultures. And whatever path you follow, if you know what to look for, it will give you more information. And then it's like making a jigsaw puzzle. And
yeah,
things
give you two examples. I can give you two examples of the number 8, for example. Florence in Italy is a very famous city, very much linked to the Hermetic tradition, because during the Renaissance, 15th century, it was the rebirth of what we call Hermeticism, through translation of ancient books, translation of the Corpus Hermeticum, translation of Iamblichus, and so on. So they reactivated few rituals, and they built few buildings related to this symbol, and one of them is the Baptistery of Florence. The Baptistery is just in front of the cathedral in Florence. And this Baptistery has 8 sides. This is an octagon. And I said that we can find a kind of continuation in the United States. And you know that Thomas Jefferson was very interested by the ancient Greek traditions. He talked Greek, ancient Greek. He read the books without any problem. And the Library of Congress, for example, the reading room, is the perfect copy of the Baptistery of Florence. If you compare, go online, Google that after, download a photo of the Baptistery in Florence, download a photo of the reading room in the Library of Congress, and you will see the connection. This is almost the same building. And so when you see at the entrance of the Library of Congress the symbol with the sun and the zodiac and everything on the floor of the entrance room in the Library of Congress, you understand the connection. Because in the Baptistery in Florence, on the floor, you have the same sun surrounded by the same zodiac. And these connections are not fantasy. You can just Google that, compare the photo, and the connection is to few men who knew very well this Hermetic tradition. And you have several examples inside the Library of Congress, and I am just using this example, but we can find others like that. So this is very interesting to see this continuation, this link, and a real one, through architecture, through symbols that are still in front of us, and we don't know how to see that. You need someone who explain to you the connection between these two parts of the world. And this is something fascinating, and I am always fascinated by that.
I find that fascinating as well, and there are communications there that if you don't know the symbols, if you don't know the language, you won't be aware of it even. But if you know the keys, so much is communicated, and you have a totally different experience from someone who's unaware.
Yeah, and this is the first step. The first step is to find the place, to understand the symbol. The other step will be how I can use this symbol and use this symbol to understand and to experiment this tradition. Because, for example, we talked about Freemasonry or other traditions. Sometimes they are just learning and thinking about symbols, but on a theoretical point of view, what is interesting is to understand how to use the symbol in a real inner experience. And I am talking about the symbol, and I'm talking also about the place. So I talked about the Library of Congress. Okay, if you know that, what do you have to do next time when you will go to the Library of Congress? So you can stop the symbol. The symbol is the first step. The next step is how I can use it.
And that's not easy. That's a process that's as much internal as external.
Yes, that's true. But in the same time, I am convinced that this is not so complicated. Sometimes the easiest way is the most effective.
Okay.
So you have to find someone who can explain to you how you can proceed, how you can experiment without any complication. Of course, you can have very complicated rituals, but these rituals will be effective if you understand the basic principles. So you need someone who can explain to you and train you on the basic principles. And after that, okay, you can go further and use other kind of practices or rituals. But first, the basic. and the belief of using the divinity world, and so on.
And you're producing a whole library for the Ordo Aurum Solis. You wrote a book published by Llewellyn, The Divine Arcana of the Aurum Solis, using tarot talismans for ritual and initiation. Before you wrote the Rediscover the Magic of the Gods and the Goddesses, how would these two books help someone on their journey into the Hermetic mysteries?
Maybe you remember that Carl Llewellyn has been a grandmaster of the Aurum Solis before me, and we talked a lot about the tradition and the tarot. He was very interested by tarot, and the tarot is a modern interpretation of an ancient tradition. Everyone knows that, but this is interesting to see where we can find this connection. And I found this connection in Italy in the time which is called the Renaissance. And in Italy, there are two parts in Italy. West part, which is linked to the city of Florence, and another part, the east part, which was linked to Byzantium and to a different civilization. And in this part, you have a city called Rimini, R-I-M-I-N-I, and this city has been very interesting because in this time, the church has been totally transformed to integrate the Hermetic heritage. So when you visit this church, you can find a chapel with the music, a chapel with the zodiac, a chapel with the gods and goddesses, and so on. And you understand the connection between the tarot and the gods and goddesses in ancient Greece and this Hermetic tradition. So visiting this church, we have been able to understand the connection between the modern tarot and maybe the original one, which was very well linked to ancient divinities. So the number of cards are not exactly the same, but there are connections. So this is always the Hermetic tradition, and linked to a very precise building and archaeological artifact. So this is why I like to see the connection between the books through Hermeticism. Part you have a building in Florence, in another one you have a building on the other side, but both are related to the same tradition.
And you also published a tarot deck. Did this tarot deck come out of your research, the Ordo Aurum Solis tarot? Does that reflect the original tarot tradition that you found?
Yes, this is a tarot. You cannot compare this tarot with the modern tarot. They are both interesting. The tarot linked to our research in the Aurum Solis is linked to the Greek gods and goddesses, the elements, and the representation of the cosmos in ancient Greek astrology. So this is a very precise system, because you know that in the modern tarot, even if you try to find connections between planets and zodiac and so on, some parts are missing. And you can try to do your best to find it. You cannot. For example, you have not the five or four elements. Something is missing. So you have to go somewhere else to find the full system. So if you are interested by ancient astrology, gods and goddesses, this is good to read more about it in the Divine Arcana of the Aurum Solis and to check the tarot, this tarot, and to understand the differences, why there is a specific number of cards, why we are talking about four elements plus one deity plus the seven planets plus the zodiac, And this is the perfect representation of the divinities in the ancient Greek system for the amethyst. So this is a kind of tarot you can use not just for divination, but for visualization, for rituals, and so on. And in the book, I am explaining several rituals using this tarot. Of course, you can use the modern one, but not this is not so efficient. In this case, you have really the divinities in front of you, in your hand. You have the sacred words that are linked to this divinity, and the sacred words are coming from artifacts really found in ancient Italy. So this is very interesting to follow this path and to experiment, to learn, to know more about it.
Are this is the tarot still available?
Not still available, but we hope that soon it will be again available in the couple of months. Yes.
That will be very awesome. I'm very much interested in what you're saying, so I definitely intend to explore it when it's available. Another book is listed, Becoming Gods, Invoking the Powerful Divinities to Transform and Enjoy Your Life. Is this book currently in print or is it coming out soon?
No. This is a book which is planned, but not in the next years. Maybe a little bit because there are others coming, like Esoteric Freemasonry, another one just after, which is different. So we have to wait a little bit for this one.
So I have something to look forward to. Good. Now I'll look forward to the tarot deck. I'll look forward to this book. And in the meanwhile, I have your other two books to become more familiar with.
And maybe you now, the latest one has been a coloring book called A Hidden Mandala.
Yes. I saw that. Is that out yet or is that coming out soon?
No. This is available everywhere. You can Google it. You can order it. I have the book just in front of me right now. And this is a very, very interesting book because when I went the last time, not the last time, but a couple of years ago, when I went in Italy with my wife, we took a lot of pictures of ancient mosaics with amazing symbols, amazing tradition. And from these mosaics, I did the book. And I did this coloring book, which is fascinating because if you are interested by symbolism, you will find many things, really.
A lot of people, especially adults, like to color now. One of the people who I'm working with on several projects, she started coloring, and she knows other people who color. So
I saw that, and when I went to Italy, I have been fascinated by this. I have to call that mandala. They are not real mandala per se, but they are working the same way because they are specific symbolic structures, and when you color that, your mind follow a very specific path linked to the symbol. So if you have a coloring book with trees and flowers and so on, okay, this is fine. This is excellent for your mood. But if you have a coloring book using specific symbols coming from the past, in this case, your mind will connect with a specific level of consciousness. And this is different. Doing a real inner experience. So this is two kind of coloring book, and I love to say that in this case, you will experiment really a part of the Western tradition coloring view of these mandalas. Yeah.
So that's good. You're very experimental and incorporating a lot of new and original types of ideas into your teachings. Now, you're also a philosophical counselor as well. What does that entail?
When I practiced philosophy and when I taught philosophy in the past, I discovered very easily that philosophy, and everyone who opened a book from an ancient philosopher, a Greek philosopher, you understand that the teachings are not intellectual. These teachings should be used to transform your life, to understand more about your life. So who we are, what is our origin, what is the afterlife, everything related to your life is interesting and can be analyzed through philosophy. So I am not talking about psychology. I am talking about philosophy in this case. So this is not a way to build a system in which I will place you. A few psychologists did that. So Freud and others built a beautiful system that can explain a few parts of your brain or mind. And after that, if I want to help you, I have to place you in this system. And according to this system, I will explain what happened in your mind. With philosophy, we are not doing that. In philosophy, we are asking questions to someone. We are not trying to place someone in a system. We are trying to enter in your system. And asking questions, we help you to discover in yourself your beliefs, your fears, everything. There is no judgment. This is just a help for you to understand more about you without building a system for you, because everyone has his own system. So this is why ancient philosophers are very interesting. And philosophical counseling is a practice which uses philosophy in this way, helping you to find more inside yourself.
That is very unique, very much needed, because as we were talking before, a lot of, as you call them, like systems, they become prisons after a while. I've been following several different paths at a distance and watching how at one point they stop being methods by which you can free yourself, and it becomes a different type of prison. And by the time you've taken three or four steps very deep into the path, you're not seeing it in the beginning. And by the time you're in the prison, you can't see it. So this is very unique and very interesting to help people find their own answers through asking questions rather than giving them another more scientific sounding belief to buy into.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. There is a boxes everywhere, and we love to put people in boxes. We love to be placed in boxes too, because this is a kind of reassurance to see the limits around you. That doesn't mean you have to find everything in yourself alone. Philosophers and ancient writings are around you to help you, to give you insights, to give you texts to meditate on. So you are not alone, but this is not text or an heritage that is imposed to you. This is a proposal. This is something you can use, you can work with. So the point is this one, to give you the opportunity to find a voice coming from the past, from someone who spent maybe his or her entire life trying to find something about life. And we have to use this text in our own experience. And we talked a moment ago about going in Italy, France, and so on. And I strongly believe that you have to feel places as you feel people. Because places can teach you something. You can experiment really something if you are in a different place, in a different country, in different cities. In my book, The Discovery of the Magic, I explained that I traveled before the war, and when you walk, where the ancient masters taught and worked, you feel something very strong and very different, very unique. And travels can help you to do that. We have to go outside the box, literally.
Mm-hmm.
Outside our mind and outside the comfort of our house. This is a kind of experiments I like to do and to help others to do. Yeah.
And you have a company called Philosophy Tours where you do just that, and that sounds very exciting too.
Yes, because as I just said, I traveled a lot around the Mediterranean world in different countries, Syria, Egypt, Greece, Turkey, and so on. And I know very well several places. I didn't go once, but several times. And we were talking with my wife, and we said, oh, this is a real inner experience to allow people to go there and to take the time in small groups to meet people from there, to experiment something, and to go behind the veil to explain to them that there is something special in this place. You cannot do that if you run, if you have a large group. You have to take the time. And it happens through the travel, but through food, wine, everything. Remember that in the Platonic tradition, for example, the meal and the banquet was something very important. The Symposium, one of the important books from Plato, is a book about dinner, and about a dinner during which everyone was trying to speak about love and about beauty. And this connection is interesting and can be born during a travel if you have not a large group. So this is an example that will occur in Italy in October and November, because we talked about the Sarone and the Sarone. And you may know that one of the largest publisher of Tarot is called Los Tarabeo.
Yes, I've worked with them.
Yes, and this is a publisher in north of Italy. And this publisher this year will present an exhibition, a unique exhibition about the Tarot and the history of the Tarot with wonderful pieces, text and books related to the Tarot. When we went to Sarabeo a few months ago, we said, okay, the best way to give a kind of gift to people interested by Western tradition and tarot decks is to build a tour around this exhibition. So we found a very interesting VIP access in this city, which is Turin, in Milan, in Florence. And we built a tour that will occur at the beginning of the exhibition in October, November, December. We have a few tours. And you can see that on the website of Philosophy Tour. And you will see that the Hermeticism and Tarot is very present. And it will be a unique experience linked to this. We will have also the opportunity to visit Los Carabeo headquarters, to receive a tarot deck and gift, several things interesting, exciting.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes, you are right. Fun first, interest, and good way.
a very good philosophy. So
yes.
You've done all these things, you're doing all these things. How about the future? You mentioned the two books were going to be coming out within the next year. What else is new and exciting coming up?
Oh, first, the two parts, the books and the travels. This is something very exciting, yes, because you will have several subjects. I don't want to talk more about the other subjects of books coming.
Okay.
You have one, is it Freemasonry? You will have more on my website. Go on theviazi.org. You will see that progressively, or on Facebook. But you will see several things linked to the Hermetic tradition, linked to the aura, for example, linked to the afterlife and death. So this is the book part. And on the travel part, you will have several tours in Italy, two Masonic tours, one in the east coast of the United States, going from New York, Baltimore, Washington, and Alexandria. And I talked about symbolism of the city of Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and I will be there to explain these blueprints and to show during the tour. And we plan a very exciting event for the summer solstice in Philadelphia. Because
wow.
We will have a kind of platonic dinner with the presence of someone playing Thomas Jefferson and declaiming ancient hymns to the gods and goddesses during the dinner, along with very VIP access of famous places in Philadelphia before to go to Washington, D.C. It will be the summer solstice coming in June. And we are lucky because we will be in the great Masonic building in Philadelphia. And there are huge and amazing Masonic temples to discover, classical styles and so on. And we will have the dinner inside the temple. So it will be a magic time. So this is something also exciting. And books will be there, of course. We'll do our best to bring books in the same time. So this
that
is an exciting thing you can discover on the philosophy tour website, and you will see this is 2 days plus 2 days, and we will talk a lot about symbolism, summer solstice, and hermeticism, everything related to that, in the beauty of these rooms and these places. So very close to you in New York.
That is very awesome. Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you about is the Ecclesia Ogvladica.
Yes.
Has that launched? I found references to it.
So, in fact, to understand what it is, you have to understand just something about the Ordo Ronsoris. As I said, the Ordo Ronsoris is an initiatic order coming from the earlier time of the Hermetic tradition. But the Ordo Ronsoris is focusing on individual practices, even if there are a few initiations and so on, but individual practices, which take a long time. And as I said, theurgy is in the middle between religion and spirituality and philosophy. So the Ecclesia Ogvladica is what I can call the theological part. That means when someone is practicing philosophy, practicing theology, some people feel from the inside a very strong connection to a god, a goddess, or a spiritual being. And
yes.
This is something which is not per se theology, which is not philosophy, which is a specific kind of religion, because this is the unique contact you can have between you and a divinity. And in this case, we call that Ecclesia Ogvladica. This is a way to say we have a theology, and I talked a lot about this theology in the book Rediscover the Magic of Gods and Goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you are... we can give you, and we give to the initiates, several ways to connect to this divinity through rituals, through specific celebrations, specific consecrations, so they will have the opportunity to progress in direction to this divinity and understand progressively what are exactly the gods and goddesses. because today there is a lot of confusion between because we are comparing, even in our subconscious, we are comparing gods and goddesses to the biblical god, for example, or to a unique god. And this is something totally different. So in the Ecclesia Organica, which is this aspect of the Ordo Aurum Solis, we can focus more on explaining theology and the relationship between us and the divinities.
You had mentioned earlier the archetypes, and that is something I spent years on that particular path. And that was very interesting because the archetypes are both inside and outside. And in fact, inside and outside disappear. And when you progress down the path, if you could avoid the temptation of inflation, which is the ego, you come to a point where you ask yourself, are you living or are you being lived? And it's a very interesting place to be, and it's a very interesting perspective to reach because it's both. And you discover too that if you're attuned to a particular archetype or expressing a particular archetype, it doesn't matter what you do, because whether you're unconscious or conscious, you're still serving the needs of the archetype. In one case, by being like a dream, and if you're awake, then you can more consciously help the archetype break its patterns. So a very different view of the ancient powers.
Yes, but in the same time, I like to say that archetypes can be compared to gods and goddesses, because scholars talked about that a lot, but in the same time, I can feel sometimes offensive for gods and goddesses to reduce them to archetypes. Because in the ancient tradition, when you are talking about gods and goddesses, we are talking about real livings, real creatures. This is difficult to use creatures, but a reality. There are gods and goddesses somewhere, if you believe in these divinities, and they are not archetypes, they are real. And if
Correct.
They are real, I cannot say it about you that you are an archetype. I am talking with you, and you are real. I can
Right.
interact with you. I can have an exchange with you, and so on. So this is not the same with an archetype. Archetype will be a power, something in my mind, which is real, but different. You are not an archetype.
Correct.
You are not your astrological sign. So when someone believes to a god or goddess, I have to remind every time that this is not just a power. This is someone real, if you believe in it. And if this is someone real, you have to associate this relationship with humility, because if a god or goddess is really a divinity, we have to be humble, and really humble, because we are almost nothing in front of them. So this is something we have to keep in mind in this relationship. Yes, they can express a specific kind of power, but they are not the power. They are themselves. And this is different. You can express power, but you are not this power. You can be brutal, but you are not brutality. This is the same thing for gods and goddesses. So someone who follows the path of theology or philosophy and theology, maybe the first step is to remember that we have to be humble, because we are almost nothing if these divinities exist. This is maybe the first step to understanding theology, for example, or theology.
I'm, like I said before, I'm Greek, and we're raised, some of us anyway, but I've met enough Greeks who were raised by this to know that it's a general belief We were raised to believe we're children of the gods, and the gods are our ancestors. And you're correct that it's a relationship, as with anything else. It's not an intellectual concept. It's not an archetype, but the intellect and the archetypes and popular culture even are good paths to the divinity. And by walking the path, you can understand an aspect, because you're seeing the divinity from this particular perspective, and this perspective reveals many things that other perspectives will not reveal. And my life has been kind of playing hide and seek with one particular divinity, and I found that particular divinity in many, many different ways, even cross-culturally. And each of the paths, again, it gives a perspective, it gives a way of viewing it. But as you said, it's not the power, the God itself. It's just your understanding and your perspective and your view of it from that particular standpoint.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I agree.
Now, have we left anything out? Because, again, you're very accomplished and you have very diverse interests and activities. Is there anything else you'd like to speak about?
To speak about life, the afterlife, everything.
Okay, so we have to have you on other shows then. Today we got an idea, like an overview, a very broad overview that didn't go very deep. But if you'd like, I can schedule in other shows and we could explore all of these things. I'm having a second show that will deal with esoteric mysteries, and that's it. So, I will invite you back on that.
It would be a pleasure, to talk again. And, of course, if someone wants to know more about something like Philosophy Tour, like Beyond Solis or my books and so on, just go on Facebook or on my website, send me an email, a message, and I will answer. Maybe not today or tomorrow, but very soon, of course.
And I can vouch for that. Jean-Louis does answer his emails, and his books are through Llewellyn, so you can go to the Llewellyn website and order the books. He also has an author page on Amazon, and you can order the books through Amazon. I want to thank you very much for being a guest on my show. And I look forward to the next time we can get together and speak. Any final words of wisdom, Jean-Louis?
Maybe the first one is to thank you for this invitation, for the opportunity to explain what I did and what I am trying to achieve in these different aspects. Something to conclude is always complicated. So we talked a lot about critical mind and philosophy. I guess that the first step in hermeticism, in spirituality, is to maintain this critical mind. That means to believe, to feel from the inside this inner reality, but in the same time to continue to maintain this critical mind. In this time we are living in today, in the United States or elsewhere, this is very important. We have to think by ourselves. Thank you again for this invitation, and thank you for everyone to listen to this show.
Okay, joyous journeys, many blessings, and I look forward to the next time we speak.
Thank you again.
Bye-bye, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Jean-Louis de Biasi, author of Rediscover the Magic of the Gods and Goddesses, which will be on our website within the week. Review. It's an awesome book. It's very, 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 very meaty, and there's a lot there to digest, and there's a lot there to experiment with. So I'll be busy with this book for a good long time. We are, as my listeners know, spending this year, 2017, exploring the quest for the Golden Fleece. Everything from role-playing games to workshops to classes. And if you'd like to get involved beyond the radio show, Paramus Community Education, 145 Spring Valley Road, Paramus, New Jersey, 201-261-7800, extension 3038. You can still register for the classes Gods and Realms. the astral realms, the dream realms, and the underworld. And in terms of role-playing games, we have two this week. On Wednesday, March 22nd, from 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the Creskill Public Library in Creskill, we have a mythic adventure role-playing game that's based on Gilbert Gallo's role-playing game Mythos. And on Saturday, March 25th, from 10 in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we have New Jersey Makers Day. And we're running two episodes of a role-playing game from Savage Mojo called Dogs of Hades. And then, of course, next week, which is the final week of the month, we have our Interfaith Argonauts Roundtable. It's going to feature the Duncans from the Urantia book in California and also the Sixth Revelation, and they're going to share with us the Father announces his 10-year plan, and then we'll have over an hour of interfaith dialogue. This is Hercules Invictus, thanking you all for joining us. Until next week, I hope that all of your journeys are joyous and that all of your adventures are grand. Be well.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.